Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Vayelech Haran. Why is Yaakov leaving home? Right. So Jake, I don't wanna focus on this, but excellent. He's leaving home for one of two reasons, and the reasons are different. His mother says leave home because Esav is gonna kill you. And his father doesn't know Esav planning to kill him. His father says leave home to find a wife. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, that's Rivka talking. Get out of here. I don't care where you go. You just have to leave Be'er Sheva. Vayelech Harana, that's Yitzchak who's talking. Go to Haran, because I don't want you to take a Canaanite woman. And remember, Esav had done that. Esav, who always, you know, wanted to pretend to be nice to his father. So he get married at the age of 40, just like his father did. But he married Canaanite women and didn't like that. Yes?
How could we say that Esav, like don't some Farshim say that Esav had the best Kibbut Horim of anyone?
The Medrash points out that Esav is good in Kibbut Avim. Yes, there's a general policy. In the Chumash itself, Esav is not such a bad guy. And Yaakov's not such a saint in the Chumash. The Rashi is probably most famously paints Yaakov as quote-unquote perfect and Esav as evil. I don't think Rashi meant that. He understood, but what the idea is that when we read the stories about Yaakov and Esav, I'll say it in a harsh way. But we don't really care about Yaakov and Esav. We care about us, the descendant of Yaakov. In other words, what is this story relevant for us? Like the Gemara says, there are thousands of prophets. Only things that are relevant, only 55 prophecies got written down. 48 men, 7 women. Because if it's not relevant for all time, who cares? The Torah is not a history book. Torah couldn't care less about Avraham, Yitzchak. Who cares? It's only relevant because why are we Jewish? Because we're the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So in the Midrash, we often take biblical figures and we turn them into symbols of ideas for people. But when we're learning Pshat and the new style really of Tanakh, you know, in Israel, like Tanakh Megov Einayim, it's very much literary analysis and stuff. But the Medrash does point out, of course, yes, Esav did do real Kibbut Avim. He did do, but at the same time, and maybe what he was doing thought was Kibbut Avim wasn't, or he copied his father, whatever, he got married at 40, but clearly that wasn't. Because we know already that in the Abrahamic tradition, you don't marry a Canaanite woman. So, but Esav did that. So Yitzchak doesn't know so much about Esav hating. He must know a little bit because he realizes Yaakov stole the blessing. But he doesn't know. Only Rivka hears that Esav's planning to kill Yaakov, which of course he never attempts to do. Esav never attempts to kill Yaakov. Yaakov maybe thinks that years later. But anyway, that's just the beginning. What I want to focus on, and for those who were in my class in grade 10, that's only one person here. I want to focus on the word im in this morning's parsha. Okay, so Yaakov is fleeing and he has a dream. And what happens in the dream? Right, there's a, okay, going up to the heavens, a Shar Shamayim, yeah, very beautiful, linking earth and heaven. What happens in the dream? What does God tell him in the dream? What's the first word? What does God say?
I'm God.
B'nei Anochi Imach. He tells him, I'm the God of your fathers, right? I'm going to give you this land. You'll be Zaracha Kafar Oretz, Yama Vakema Tzafona Benegva. B'nei Anochi Imach. I will be with you. Ushmarticha B'chol Asher Tilech. I will guard you wherever you go. Don't worry. Normally, if somebody tells you not to worry, what does that mean?
You should worry.
But when God tells you not to worry, probably maybe means you shouldn't worry. Vashivoticha el adamazor, I will return you to this land. Ki lo ezavcha, I will not forsake you. Ad asher desiti, ad asher dibartlech, until I do all of this. Very nice. Yaakov wakes up, says, oh my God, I can't believe it. I'm like in heaven. Anoch ye achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, God is here. Vanochi lo yadati, I didn't know that. How awe-inspiring. Mana raha makom hazeh, what an awe-inspiring place. I didn't know. He was running away. He didn't know where he was. And according to the rabbis, it's the same place where Abraham like sacrifices, or you know, Akedat Yitzchak takes place. He doesn't know this holy place. Wow! But if God appeared to him, remember this is the first time God appears to Yaakov. Right? God hasn't appeared to Yaakov yet. This is the first time. So I didn't know. Lo yadikim einze kiim bed Elohim. This is the house of God. This is Shar HaShemayim. He calls it Beit Elohim. Right. Vayashkem vayomar, and now he wakes up and he says, he makes a matseva, calls it Beit El, because it's Beit Elohim. Vayidur Yaakov Netherlimor, and Yaakov makes a vow, an oath. Im yeh Elohim imati, if God will be with me, Ushmarani b'derech hazeh, and he will guard me, v'natan li lechem l'chol v'egel levosh, and he'll give me food to eat and clothes to wear, v'shavti v'shalom al beit avi, and return me, or I will return, with this, whatever, where does the clause end and the vow start, v'shavti beit avi v'yashem li l'elohim, and then God will be my God. And if not, v'aven azot, and this stone, asher samti matzeveh yeh beit Elohim, this will be the house of God, v'chol asher titein li aser asren olach, whatever God gives me, I will give aser asren olach. How much am I going to give to God?
A tenth.
Aser asren olach. How much are you going to give to God?
Ten.
Who learns hilchot staka? How much staka are you supposed to give?
A tenth.
Maximum 20%.
Ideally 20%. Ideally 20%. Right. Maybe maximum, maybe ideal. Maybe. Okay. All right. For a very aser asrenu. A tenth and a tenth. Chazal learned from, derived from here. Aser asren olach. A tenth and a tenth. This is the it's not exactly a biblical requirement, but this is our opening source that you should give 20 aser, a tenth and a tenth. You should give 20% in tzedakah. What's the problem, of course, with this oath? Yeah, Yaakov's a little bit heretical. God just appeared to him and said, Yaakov, don't worry, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to guard you. And Yaakov says, if God is with me and he guards me, I'll give him 20%, and if not, of course I won't. Right? How could he say such a thing? You hear the question? How in the world? What is a man of no faith? If God just promised to be with you, he doesn't trust God. No? Isn't that the simple reason? So I believe Rashi says, if I'm not mistaken, Shema Yigram Hachet. He was afraid God promised, but you can undo promises. A teacher can promise something, but if the kids misbehave, you take away the promise. God says, although is that really true? Doesn't all good promises take place? So that's one way. Yaakov was saying im. He wasn't calm. In other words, the promise is conditional. According to this understanding, maybe I'm going to sin. It's not God is saying, if you don't sin, I promise I'll be with you. Obviously, I'm making a covenant with you. If you don't keep your half of the covenant, so why should I keep my half of the covenant? That's one approach. But let's discuss the im approach. So we learned in Hilchot Staka, what does the word im mean?
If you're able to.
That's one thing we learned.
Oh.
But what does Rashi quote? That the word im in the Torah means?
When?
If. Except on three occasions it means when. When. So I'm gonna pause it. They're talking three mitzvot. This is not a mitzvot. I'm gonna pause it that the word im here doesn't mean if, it means when. Just like the Torah says, interesting enough, when you give staka, im kesef talve et ami. If you give a loan to a person, don't charge him interest, etc. And Chazal say if doesn't mean if. If means when. Of course, it means when, because what do you mean if I give you a loan? You're obligated. I'm obligated. It's not optional, staka. So then the question is, what's the question you have to ask when you hear something like that? You guys have to have critical mind. It's the most important thing to learn. We discussed it. Only a child can pray, and only a child can learn. You want to learn, you have to think critically. Don't be so religious when you learn. Oh, Rashi said it. All of learning is, as a matter of fact, I just saw last night, I was reading something, and they quoted the tshuva of the Rosh. The Rosh says, who's greater than Rashi, the greatest, whoever lived? And yet Rabbeinu Tam is, they argue on Rashi. That's the Jewish way. You ask questions. Rashi said it. Okay, that's very nice. Rashi's amazing. These people are wonderful. You can ask questions. If e means when, does that make sense? No, why doesn't it make sense? For two reasons. Because im doesn't mean when. Im means when. If. And if the Torah wanted to say when, what should it have done?
Say when.
It should have said when. But we assume Chazal know what they're talking about. So why does it say im? So in that situation, what was the answer of the Maharal? Time for a review. You should check your notes once in a while. Review with, talk to your brother a little bit.
Yeah.
So im, what is im? So the Maharal is a beautiful explanation. It's an obligation to give tzedakah. But why should I give tzedakah? Because I want to, not because I'm obligated. When you're obligated to do something, you don't really want to do it necessarily. You should give tzedakah as a volunteer with excitement. You should feel, in other words, not that somebody, I think it's a beautiful idea. So the Torah writes your attitude towards tzedakah. Of course, if you don't want to give, you have to give anyway. Im doesn't really mean if. We're just being nice to you. We're letting you feel like you're magnanimous in doing it out of the goodness of your heart. If not, im doesn't mean im. Im means when. Okay? So I'm going to use this same theory here. Okay?
What are the other times it says im?
So one by Bikurim and one by, it's Rashi quotes at the end of Parshat Yitro. Im mizbach avanim taseli. Im mizbeach avanim taseli. Avanim, yeah. Right, it has to be from avanim. I don't remember the exact wording of the pasuk. So there, Rashi quotes from the Medrash, from Rabbi Shmuel, there are three places. So you have to figure out, we don't have time now, and I didn't look it up, why in the two other places does im mean one? But whenever the rabbis say something that's sort of off kilter, you have to ask why the rabbis saying it. Yeah, we have great respect. We assume the rabbis know what they're doing. But you have to figure out what's going on. Okay, so im Elohim Elim. Yaakov says, if God will be with me. We're saying, maybe it's our idea, that he doesn't really mean that. He really means when God will with me. So why does he say if? He could have said when, right? It's the same question, right? And by the way, the link to tzedakah, Yaakov says, if so, God will be with tzedakah. And the word im by tzedakah does mean when. So it there's a little bit of a parallel here. So I want to say like this, how should a Jew feel? I sometimes say this, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. You have to live your life as if God doesn't exist, God forbid. But what I mean like that means aim some krim al hanes. You're not allowed to rely on miracles. Okay, you have to build. You have to put a roof on your fence. Already rush goods. If the person is going to die, he'll die anyways. The person is going to fall off the roof. But you shouldn't be the God. You have to live naturally. You can't worry about how God. We go to doctors. You have to work for a living. You have to live naturally. Aim some krim al hanes. You can't rely on God. It's bad to rely on God. You know, I'll do that. But God will help. We don't believe in that, right? You know the bad joke, the guy goes on a date, right? You know that joke? That joke, the guy goes, he's learning in Kollel, so he goes to pick up a girl, and the father asks him, so what do you do? He's learning, says, what do you plan to do for a living? God will provide. And what is this? God will provide. God will provide. So he leaves, and the wife turns to the father, what do you think of the guy? He says, I don't know, but he thinks I'm God. Okay. Anyways, okay. So you can't rely on God. I'll say a beautiful idea. I saw this in the Nishmat Avram. The Nishmat Avram is a book on medical ethics written by Dr. Abraham Abraham. That's his name in Israel. He's one of the top people in the world. He wrote in this field. He wrote, I believe it's a 6-volume work. It's a fantastic work. It's like he takes a Shulchan Aruch and then on the bottom discusses all the modern like shailas in medicine. So he has in his introduction there, we're in the first page, I think, because the Shulchan Aruch begins. What's the first words in the Shulchan Aruch? The first words of the Shulchan Aruch. Yikaber Kari, and then the first words in the Ramah, wake up line, or not the first word, but Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. God is always before me. What does the word neged mean?
Against.
God, neged means with, but it also means against. In other words, it means opposite things. So he quotes from somebody, Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, a person should always feel God is against him. Wow. You should always feel distant from God. Wow. Why would you want that? On the one hand, you should feel close. You have to do both at the same time. You have to be have contradictory. Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, if God blesses you with a lot of money, you have to worry. Maybe I'll turn into arrogant. You always have to look that, what's the downside of this? Or if you want to put it, another way, you have to have fear of God. God is, he's doing something against me. I have to be afraid of God. Shivita shamla negdi tamid. If you feel too close to somebody, you know, you can get away with a lot of stuff. You know, your best friend or your husband, your wife, you know, you can do things because they understand you. If you don't know somebody, right, how do you act much more respectfully when you're a guest in somebody's house than in your own home? Because you're close to the people, you know, you can get away with stuff. So if you feel too close to God, it may not be so good. You have to have Shivitish. It's not the simple meaning. Of course, Shivitish, I'm like, that means you always feel the presence of God. But there's a beautiful idea encapsulated here. So you should feel the word, why say Leneged? Leneged does have that negative connotation. So Shivitish, I should always feel God is sort of opposed to me, and therefore that'll keep me on the track. I better act better. God doesn't like what I'm doing. I better look. I have to have Yirat Hashem. Or, like the Netziv says, what's an Azer Kenegdo mean? Who's an Azer Kenegdo?
Against him and with him. Woman.
What Azer? Why did God? How does every English, you know, Chumash, I assume here too, translate the word Azer Kenegdo? How do they translate the word Azer Kenegdo in English? That's why every translation is a commentary. That's why translations. Nebuch, they made a 3-day fast when the Torah was translated into Greek, because you have to fast. You can't have translations. You can never understand something in translation. What does it say? What's Azer Kenegdo? A helpmate, right? Right? A helpmate. Okay, I don't know where. But, okay, what does Azer Kenegdo really mean? What is neged? Against. What does Azer mean? Help. Help by going against. What's the best way to help somebody? By being a constructive critic, right? I will be a helper corresponding to him. That's how arts will. That's a funny corresponding neged, you know, yeah. Next to. But Azer Kenegdo means that the husband doesn't want to go to minyan in the morning. The wife doesn't want to go to minyan in the morning. So the husband gives her a elbow and that. To get out of bed, you lazy bum, daf yomishir, right? Go. In other words, Azer Kenegdo, you help a person by being a constructive critic. So the neged has things. So I think Yaakov Avinu said, Im ye Elohim imati. If he felt that God gave him a promise that he's going to bring him home, Yaakov doesn't have to do anything. Everything's all done for him. So Yaakov had to have the Torah wants to let us know, even when God gave him a promise, he'll take him. And God's promise is a real promise. It's not, you know, conditional, right? God's promise. But we can never feel that promise. We have to live our life. Imi Elohim imati. If God will be with me. Make sense? I think it's a beautiful idea. I don't know. But that's basically. So Yaakov Avinu said he wasn't, God forbid, questioning. Because unfortunately, how can he question? He wasn't questioning God. He was showing a higher level of faith. God, I'm so appreciative. You just promised me I can relax, so to speak. But I don't want to relax, because if I want to grow as a religious person, I have to work harder and harder. So Yaakov Avinu says, Imi Elohim imati. Okay, makes sense? Any questions? Okay, that's that idea. There is more to us. I just want to raise another issue. Got 5 minutes left, which we won't solve, but maybe we'll. Okay. Yaakov gets to the house of Laban. And he's going to work for 7 years, right? Whatever, okay. And then what happens on the wedding night?
Switcheroo.
And what does Rashi say? Famous, what do we see? Rachel mevakal al baneha, you know, the famous medrash. What's the famous medrash? God listens to the prayers of Rachel, not Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Rachel mevakal, me'anan lechem es haftor on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, right? That we go into exile, Rachel's buried at Beit Lechem, on the way out, and she's the one who God listens to. Why Rachel? What's the greatness of Rachel? What did she do to her sister? You don't know that midrash? The signs? Yaakov and Rachel, Yavam he was going to trick them, so they made some code to figure out who they are. I mean, the whole story is a little bit strange. I don't even know where, but leave that aside. And Yaakov, Rachel didn't want Leah to be, she realized, Leah's going to be very embarrassed. She's the older sister, she's not married. So Rachel gave, not to embarrass her sister, she gave her the codes, and therefore, that's how she married. And that tremendous act of self-sacrifice, amazing, and that tremendous, like, sensitivity, not to embarrass Rachel, makes Rachel our heroine, the one whose prayers God is going to listen to more than anybody else. Does it make sense? Good or bad? What question do you have? Remember, think critically.
How could she trick Yaakov?
Ah, fantastic question. How could she trick Yaakov? It's very nice for Leah. That's very nice if Yaakov's not involved in the picture. How could she trick Yaakov? It's very nice. It's very nice. There's Leah. That's that bird. And by the way, is Yaakov angry at her? And that's, you know, maybe she was right. Does Yaakov get angry at? Who does Yaakov get angry at? Laban. He doesn't get angry at Rachel. He knows he gave Rachel coats, right? If this is, you know, literal, he knows he gave her coats. So what's going? How could he do that to Yaakov? So we don't have time to fully develop the theme, but this is sort of like an Aveir L'Shem. Basically, Rachel was in a very difficult position. It's like sometimes, like
in room 127, the
Mefkaz, 110. We have 2 minutes, right? 2 minutes.
So
basically, you sometimes you have no choice. You have to make the. There are two decisions. It's a really bad choice. Either she's going to hurt Leah or she's going to hurt Yaakov. She has no choice. She can't do. So she decided. She made her decision to hurt Leah. To hurt Yaakov, so to speak, to help Leah, which means she's hurting Yaakov. But you know what? She did it totally with the intent not to embarrass her sister. The fact that it had negative, there's nothing you can do about it. The Netziv develops this point last week when Yaakov tricks his father, right? So it says when Esav comes back, Esav says, what's the word? And then he says, he cried out a cry, a bitter cry. And the Medrash says, it's the same language in Megillat Esther. And the Medrash says, the cry of Esav was heard 1,000 years later in Shushan. God got his revenge, and Yaakov, you tricked Esav now, we're going to punish you 1,000 years later. So then the Sieve asks a very simple question. Why is he not punished for tricking, for Yitzchak? It's only for tricking. Esav's like not such a great guy. He fooled his father. So he's saying very briefly, sometimes you do like an Aveir L'Shma, like sometimes you have to do an act which isn't nice. But if you intend 100% for the sake of heaven, you have a bad choice. You want to do one choice? We can live with that. That's okay. Yaakov Avinu, really, it pained him that he had to hurt his father. He didn't want to do it. His mother told him to do it. He didn't want to do it. Okay, but he was doing it, but he really did it. He didn't want to hurt his father. But Esav, I got a little bit of pleasure of giving a shtach to Esav. So for that little bit of pleasure, that means his mitzvah wasn't totally done lishma. So the same thing here, in a sense. Rachel, she was she hurt Yaakov, and maybe it wasn't the right decision, but her intent was 100% right, and for that she's going to be rewarded greatly. Sometimes you have to make decisions that hurt other people, but when you do, it has to be done totally lishma. The principle of a person should always act shalom lishma, because then you come to shma, doesn't apply to public officials. It doesn't apply to people who are politicians, who give more money to healthcare, not to education, because they have a friend in the healthcare and there'll be benefit for him. That's an Aveir, that's they're hurting people. You always have to hurt people in politics. You make decision. You have to hurt somebody. You make decision. But if you do it lishma, it's okay. If you do it shalom lishma, then the hurt, you get racked for it. So that's the thing of rachat. I think that's also something to think about. We always have to make difficult decisions, and that's okay. Up to 110, finishing. And if we do, we make the best. Okay. Good shot.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.